On behalf of Palo Alto Networks and Carisoft, we would like to welcome you to today's podcast, focused around the evolution of how cybersecurity is delivered as a shared service. Our panel of speakers will discuss what impact the first Quality Services Management Office shared service offering from the Office of Management and Budget in Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency will have on federal agencies.
Welcome, everyone. I am Coleman Mehta. I'm the Senior Director for U.S. Policy at Palo Alto Networks, and I will be your moderator today. I'm very pleased to welcome you all today to our webinar on the evolution of cybersecurity as a shared service. As you saw, we have an exciting lineup of speakers this afternoon, representing Congress, the federal government, and an industry perspective as well. So our goal is to offer background and insights on CISO's Quality Services Management Office, its shared services offerings, how it will work going forward with the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program, and opportunities for engagement. But before we get started with the panel, I'm very pleased to introduce Maura Bergen for opening remarks. Maura is, as noted, the Director for the Cybersecurity, Infrastructure Protection, and Innovation Subcommittee in the U.S. House of Representatives. She is a fantastic resource for insights into Congress and congressional oversight on cybersecurity issues. Maura is here this afternoon to tell us about Congress's priorities for CISA and for federal network security and what she's focused on for the balance of the year. So with that, Maura, thank you so much for joining us today, and the floor is yours.
Thanks, Coleman. And thank you for having me here today. I'm going to warn you, I'm participating from the Catskills, so hopefully my internet isn't too choppy and you can all hear me okay. So I've divided up kind of my opening remarks into three buckets, essentially. And the first bucket being, what can we do in the near term? What can we do before Congress breaks before the election? And then we have also, then the second bucket is sort of the midterm. What will we do as we wrap up in the lame duck and we begin the next Congress? And then finally, what's our vision for CISA, and how do we want to continue to help drive CISA to focus its mission and to be the civilian cyber hub that we had envisioned when we implemented the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Act of 2018. So. Our near-term goals are, will be no surprise, election security. If anyone's been watching the news lately, it's a hot topic. So Chairman Thompson, who I work for, is focused on securing elections on essentially three different fronts. He wants to fight disinformation, whoever the source. So if he wants social media companies and news organizations to correct misinformation coming from advocacy organizations, elected officials, anyone who could give people bad information leading into the elections and undermine confidence in the election results. Second place is he wants to ensure that the Postal Service is well positioned to do its part on election day. That means state and local officials will have to coordinate with Postal Service on what dates, what deadlines are appropriate to ensure the ballots are delivered to voters on time and then returned back to election officials so they can be counted. And finally, we are concerned about general election security. General cybersecurity. People will still be voting in person, so we want to make sure that people are implementing security patches for their voter registration databases, their e-poll books, and the election equipment themselves. Towards that end, we'll be leaning on CISA to push out stronger guidance on best practices, including making sure that elections officials aren't using election equipment with wireless modems embedded in them, and making sure that they are signed up for cyber scanning. They've had a lot of success working with states on cyber scanning and implementing cyber solutions, but they've had less success working with local governments and counties. We want to see them push those services down to those more local levels where there might be some more vulnerabilities that aren't being resolved. The second big bucket issue that we are focusing on from now until October is securing funding for state and local cybersecurity. This has been a big priority of the chairman since well before the COVID pandemic hit the United States. However, the COVID pandemic has brought into focus the necessity for not only improving the cybersecurity posture of state and local governments, but modernizing their IT systems. So making sure that they are ripping and replacing legacy technology that can't be patched and can't be updated, and re-architecting those systems to more cloud-based and cloud-friendly technologies, as well as implementing cybersecurity plans to manage cybersecurity risks in an ongoing fashion in the years to come. Towards that end, there are two legislative initiatives that we've been pushing, H.R. 5823, the State and Local Cybersecurity Act, as well as the State and Local IT Modernization and Cybersecurity Act. H.R. 5823 is authored by Mr. Richmond. The latter is authored by Mr. Langevin. Both are bipartisan pieces of legislation, very important for getting state and local governments the resources they need to defend their networks from the kinds of crippling ransomware attacks that we saw, that we've seen in recent years, and that's continued throughout the pandemic. And of course, as state and local governments became e-governments overnight during the pandemic, it really emphasized the need for this additional surge in funding. So in addition to pushing those two pieces of legislation, we've also tried to write to House leadership to encourage additional funding for state and local government cybersecurity in different COVID packages unsuccessfully. But thank you to members on the call who have supported those efforts. That has been very helpful, and we're going to keep plugging away with that moving forward. I would also point out that both pieces of legislation, the State and Local Cybersecurity Act and the State and Local IT Modernization and Cybersecurity Act, both direct CISA to develop state and local national cybersecurity plans, which would set forth benchmarks for state and local cybersecurity standards and require CISA to identify opportunities for state and local governments to leverage federal cybersecurity tools and programs to improve their own cybersecurity. Right now, state and local governments can buy off Schedule 70, but we want to make sure that CISA is pushing that information out to people so state and local governments understand that they can do that. So those are our sort of near-term goals. But then we have our midterm goals, which involve, number one, doing sort of a post-COVID assessment of how the rapid transition to telework affected both federal network security as well as the security of federal contractors and private sector. That's going to be an ongoing process, and it's going to we have a GAO report in the queue, so we'll get some good data from that. But what we've seen in the near term is similar trends that we've seen in the past. So CISA, an event that required CISA to reprioritize its activities. In this case, there was an increase in activity against HHS. CISA decided to redeploy reprioritize CDM deployments and rapidly deploy tools to HHS, which made a lot of sense. At the same time, however, it slowed the deployment of tools to other agencies that were in the queue, including national labs. We have concerns about CISA when CISA is managing a crisis, having to press pause on the day-to-day operations in order to shift resources to meet the needs of an unanticipated event. This is not the first time we've seen that. It happened back in 2018, in 2017, when they were dealing with election security, and there was a wait for risk and vulnerability assessments for state and local governments. And so the 9-month waiting period disappeared because federal assessments were put on hold in order to provide risk and vulnerability assessments to state and local governments. Robbing Peter to pay Paul works in a pinch, but it's not a policy you want to continue. And crises will continue to happen. We need to think about ways we can equip CISA to surge resources in areas of high need without pressing pause on ongoing security programs. I think one of the positive things that we've learned from the pandemic is the potential of telework and understanding that a lot of the cybersecurity activities that the federal government was doing could continue during telework. And what does this mean for addressing the cybersecurity workforce shortage in the federal government? Does that open up opportunities for CISA to source cybersecurity talent and other federal agencies to source cybersecurity talent in other regions of the country if people are able to work remotely? And I think that's something else that we'll look into, because we've been very focused on addressing the ongoing cybersecurity workforce shortage across the federal government. Long term, we're going to start looking at the results of the CDM GAO report that came out today. I'm sure I'm not sure it's in public yet, but it will be public this afternoon. And one of the issues, one of the lessons learned from that report is that CISA needs to improve the way it coordinates and serves as a liaison between service providers and the agencies it's supporting, and making sure it's translating what security tools and needs that an agency has accurately to a service provider, to ensure that the tools are configured properly in a way that will provide adequate that will provide situational awareness and the benefits to the end user and to the federal and to CISA itself. I think those lessons learned from the CISA report that's coming out this afternoon will benefit CISA as it implements its responsibilities as a CUSMO for cybersecurity. I'm pleased to see that they started off with some very discrete pilots, and I appreciate the challenges that will entail to provide services across 99 federal agencies that have different risk tolerances, different risk postures, different capability to partner with CISA and implement some of the tools that CISA recommends. And so we'll be doing oversight on that moving forward, making sure that CISA is well positioned to execute its responsibilities as a CUSMO, as well as making sure that the partner agencies are well resourced and equipped to partner with CISA and work together to improve the cybersecurity posture across the federal government. We're also going to be looking to clarify the roles of CISA versus the sector-specific agencies. That's a less of a .gov issue, but nevertheless an important issue. It's caused confusion across the private sector when it's unclear who you go to get different pieces of information and report different pieces of information to when it comes to threats to critical infrastructure. So we're going to look for opportunities to clarify those responsibilities moving forward. And Coleman, I know I'm coming up on my time, so I will just wrap up by saying that CISA's success is dependent on ongoing and effective engagement with the private sector, understanding the needs of the critical infrastructure owners and operators, and then understanding the needs of the agencies that it serves as the agency responsible for securing the .gov. So I encourage everyone on the call to continue their engagement with CISA. I know that's been helpful in helping CISA clarify its mission and clarify its responsibilities and its mission across for civilian cybersecurity. So thank you all, and sorry, Coleman, I know I ran over a little bit.
No, Maura, thank you so much. That was a really comprehensive look at what Congress is looking at from a cybersecurity perspective, and very, very helpful. I'll note from Palo Alto Networks, we strongly support your efforts and the committee's efforts to ensure that cybersecurity is incorporated into any IT modernization funding, whether that's at the state level or at the federal level, across the whole public sector. So we're looking forward to continuing to partner with you on that.
Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you, Maura, so much. That was really helpful. And why don't we turn now to the panel itself. So as I mentioned, we have an exciting lineup of speakers today to talk about CISA's activities and how they deliver shared services, be it through the new office, the Quality Services Management Office, the CDM program, or more. So quick introductions. We have James Shears, the Branch Chief for the Quality Services Management Office at CISA. Alongside Jim, we have Matt Brown, who is the CEO of the cybersecurity services firm ShorePoint, and Rob Palmer, who is Chief Technology Officer at ShorePoint, as well as a former Deputy Chief Technology Officer at Homeland Security. And finally, we have David Knisley. David is the Director of Strategic Programs at Palo Alto Networks. So thank you all for being here today. I'll note that I'd like this to be as conversational as possible. So even if we direct the question specifically to one person, I hope that you all will feel free to jump in as you see fit. So let's get started. Jim, let's kick it off with a question for you. So I think we've all followed the concept of quality service management offices since the OMB memorandum came out a bit last year, and then CISA's subsequent designation as the lead for cybersecurity shared services under that concept. But maybe you could just take us through a bit of the background of the QUSMO cybersecurity service, sort of what the near term looks like for you, and what maybe the initial services offerings might be.
So yeah, thanks for that nice introduction. So as you said, yes, if you can believe it, it was only about a year and a quarter ago that the M memo 1916 came out that established the sharing quality services strategy and the designation of QSMOs and how the governance would work. And we were at that time pre-designated as the cyber QSMO. So after some work with OMB and with GSA to get our program together, working with the Shared Services Governance Board, working with the senior agency points of contact, of course with our agency customers, we spent our year standing up our program management office and our various capabilities and thanks. Yes, we did actually just this spring receive our formal designation, so the official blessing. And importantly, the route chosen was to designate us for three specific service areas, for starters. So one is in vulnerability disclosure, so a vulnerability disclosure policy platform. Another is for protective DNS. And the last one for security operations centers. And so those are the three areas that we started in on early and for which we were formally designated. I'll start with SOC. So that's an area that many are familiar with. So it was really based on foundational work OMB and CISA had done to understand the maturity of security operations in agencies. So taking a look at that varying maturity state, as Maura said, different networks, different configurations, thinking about how we could bring services to bear to help agencies fill those gaps. So optimize, mature, fill critical capability gaps. And we started in our first year in the SOC as a service designation by partnering with Department of Justice. So they have a standing service that they offer primarily to small agencies who want to outsource or leverage a managed service for their security operations. So we're working with them to stand them up as a assessed and provider in our marketplace of solutions. So Department of Justice already offering their services, good services, so we're working to enshrine that. And then secondly, in VDP, this also built on a key policy area. So CISA issuing a draft binding operational directive outlining how agencies should enable the receipt of researcher reports. So researchers finding potential vulnerabilities on federal agency systems and finding a way to bring those to the attention of the agencies for remediation. So CISA, the QSMO, looked at this early and said, well, might it make more sense, be more cost effective to create one government-wide platform where not only researchers can come to submit reports centrally, but that agencies can leverage as a shared service to enable the receipts of those reports. So we established the standards and requirements for that, working with our government-wide agencies, did some market research, and in fact, we just a few weeks ago offered up our RFP, so the response is coming in for that. So we are in the middle of acquisition, and our plan is to go live with that service this fall. The third is the protective DNS service, so this is in the early phases. There too in market research, but moving towards acquisition as well. This is to stand up a single protective DNS resolver for government-wide. And in the in terms of acquisition strategy, for those who are familiar with the QSMO work, we actually are working with GSA on the VDP platform for starters. And two major reasons for that. One, they have a history of IT Schedule 70 and the HAC-SINs, other areas. But a big benefit is that the contract that we establish will be available to all agencies to procure directly. So if an agency leverages our platform, they can simply go work with GSA on this government-wide vehicle that we've established. So with a lot of flexibility for the agency implementers. And that's an approach that has worked well so far. I mean, we learn something new every day, but we do anticipate to work to establish these government-wide vehicles. And importantly, that allows us to play a key role in the requirements on the work, but it allows the agencies then to capture those true economies of scale in looking at government-wide implementation. That is also preliminarily the approach we intend to take in SOC. So as mentioned, we started with DOJ, a federal shared service provider, but we are looking at exploring a government-wide acquisition vehicle for that as well in the coming year. Coleman, do I have one more minute, or should I wrap it up?
Please, nope, continue. That's great.
I'll just wrap it up. The key point that, two key points, and I'm glad Maura raised this because it's something we work on every day. One, we're very strong backers of a strong voice of customer approach, so we engage our agency customers extensively to get their requirements and needs, find out what their gaps are to make sure that the services are what they need. And secondly, yes, we engage industry extensively in developing these solutions. It could be through fora such as this or through innovation summits. We're looking at maybe reverse industry days to get feedback. And then, of course, it's through the formal acquisition process, so standard RFI market research phases as well. But we are definitely thinking about how to engage industry for best practices. And in the VDP, for instance, that was where we did our market research, where we decided it was best to go with a SaaS solution rather than building something from scratch. So we're really able to leverage best-in-class solutions in the marketplace. So we'll take that step forward, but in both areas, voice of customer, industry engagement, always looking to improve. So always appreciate the feedback on how we're doing. So
that's great, Jim. I appreciate it. And for those of you who don't know, I believe Jim comes from the GSA world as well. And so I expect that you're quite able to make use of the synergies between CISA and GSA mm-hmm. to make it as effective as possible. Great. Why don't we turn to Matt quickly. Matt, you have been involved with the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation, the CDM program, for many years. As you look at CISA's approach to shared services, what can be leveraged from your perspective from CDM in terms of lessons learned? How can it all fit together?
Yeah, I think there are a number of things that they can be built upon from CDM over the years. Number one is they partnered with GSA early on with the assisted acquisition of the BPA. And that worked very well in terms of attaching both products and services onto the original BPA and then moving them over to learn lessons off of that and then move the product over to the CDM SINs on GSA schedule to enable acquisition across the federal government for that. I think, secondly, you know, CDM learned a lot of lessons between the Task Order 2 series and the Defend series, where Task Order 2 was kind of a solution built by an integrator pushed out to agencies, but the agencies themselves had ideas of how they wanted that solution to be built and how they wanted to align their own cyber priorities with some of the CDM capabilities that were being brought online. And so they built in the RFS process to defend, to enable the agency to have a voice on what technologies they need to secure their mission and meet their priorities, both departmental-wise as well as compliance-related, and, you know, allowed them to really kind of set their own priorities and align some of their future planning for budgets and for technologies in line with what CDM has done. And then, you know, I would say lastly, under Defend F or the Task Force 2F program, where CDM was delivered as a managed service to some of the small and micro agencies. They learned a lot of lessons off of how well that capability was implemented. And then as you move into DefendF, how those small and micro agencies can consume services that they would not normally have the manpower or the resources to be able to build. And so, you know, to Jim's point earlier, where you're looking at kind of what are the specific capabilities that can be commoditized and served and issued as a service to agencies to procure and leverage if they don't have the resources to do it. DefendF has a lot of examples of how that can be done. And then, you know, one of the things they're doing with DefendF is kind of building out the portfolio of capabilities that are mapped out over time. And so an agency can look at that portfolio and say, you know, maybe I do endpoint management really well, but I really struggled with having an enterprise vulnerability management program, and maybe I want to consume the CDM services for that. And so they can kind of pick and choose what capabilities they need and how they fit into their specific cyber priorities to determine what they want to enable. And so, yeah, I would say in closing, you know, the more you're wrapping in the agency in terms of what their needs are and then aligning those to the capabilities being offered, and trying to keep that in sync to some degree, I think that is where you get the biggest bang for your buck in terms of success, because you've got alignment of what does the outcome look like across the agency, the integrator, the provider, and ultimately, you know, the CDM program or CISA in terms of what they're offering as a service that will need to be consumed by the agency.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point, and thank you, Matt. And the one piece of that that I think I would focus even more on and would love to hear your perspective about is how you sort of think about prioritizing services for various agencies of maybe a different size, right? So do you start with the CFO Act agencies because maybe they have more capabilities, or do you start with the smaller micro agencies, as you called them, because that helps you build confidence? Is there a sweet spot in there? How does it all sort of fit together?
Well, you know, I think whenever you're talking about consuming managed services, you have a lot of things at play here. You've got budgets in play. You've got existing resources and responsibilities in play. You've got schedules and contracts that have been issued prior that are in play. So bringing a kind of a cabinet-level agency off of their kind of on-prem delivered or internal capabilities that they've been building out over time and making them moving all over to managed service may be a little bit difficult. I think some of the small and micro agencies are a little bit more ripe to being able to test out and vet the capabilities because they don't have the long programs in place. They don't have contracts that have already been let to companies that are delivering these services for them or kind of an organization structure built out to deliver them as well. And so they're probably a little bit easier to consume some of those capabilities faster, and then you test them out and then determine if they can roll more to a managed service, I'm sorry, to a larger agency. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of examples, of larger agencies that are able to consume things faster as a managed service, certainly components that maybe look to the department, where the department may provide services that they can consume. But I think in my mind, it's a little bit easier for some of the smaller micros to test out, vet out the service, and then determine, you know, what are the entanglements that a larger agency may need to look at to kind of manage through as they look to consume them.
That's great. That's a good segue into Rob. Rob, as we noted, you were the Deputy Chief Technology Officer at DHS, which makes you, at the time, a customer of CISA's. So maybe you could draw on that experience just a little bit with previous departmental efforts to consolidate service offerings and just sort of, you know, talk us through what considerations agencies would be taking into account when they review shared services offerings and, you know, determine how to proceed.
Pull from what Jim and both Jim and Matt are discussing is, you know, really there's only a few levers an agency, or at least what we've learned over the years, is going to pull to decide on shared services or managed services. And those are really, one is cost, not just financial, but organizational cost. What is it going to cost an agency to move in that direction? And Matt hit on a bunch of that. Capability, maybe it's a capability that you don't have, and that's the only place to get it. So sometimes that comes into play. And then we also can't ignore the congressional mandates or agency mandates as well. Usually it takes, two or more of those to overcome the organizational cost to move in that direction. And I think, as Jim alluded to, and I think it's all over there, the way that it's been presented is, there's been a lot of lessons learned over the years in terms of both positive and negative, in terms of shared services, both big and small. All of them, in one shape or form, made a ton of sense in all the discussions. And for one reason or another, whether it was implementation or sometimes it was just the evolution of the technology itself, where it just aged out. But all those factors have brought us really to this point where, there's a lot of smart people doing this stuff, and I believe those lessons learned are gonna carry forward in whatever implementation happens. So as much as we can keep all of those things in mind and collectively, go after this new instantiation of this. Jim already alluded to a lot of the lessons learned and how things, just in him describing the three areas that have been officially adopted or whatever the term we're using is. You know, really, we found a sweet spot. Jim didn't say we're going to do all things for all people. He said we're starting out on what we know there's a market for, and then, you know, if it grows from there, great. But that's really where we're starting, and I think that in and of itself is an indication of the lessons that have been learned and what we have to look forward to in establishing these services.
That's a really great point. Thanks, Rob. And we should absolutely underscore that I think DHSs and CISA specifically are really taking through the foundational steps now and thinking about how to build off of those. You know, I was struck by the three considerations that you offered, cost, both financial and organizational, and capability and department or agency or congressional mandates. And really only one of those, the capability side, is technical. So I think it's really telling that what we're talking about here is, you know, governance activities and budget cycles and all the things that go into making technology successful that aren't always technology specific. But the one I didn't hear you talk about, which I wonder if it might be on the minds of other departments and agencies and their CIO shops, is access and sort of control over their environments. And maybe you could speak to just a little bit about how agencies might be approaching, you know, what they think of as control of their environments, or how they might be able to make use of a shared service and but be willing to sort of, you know, share that responsibility with CISA and others.
Yeah, I think that is a good point. I would say that if those other factors are there and compelling, you know, the idea that you don't or you lose a little bit of, I don't know, maybe perception of control or you know, have to provide some additional insight into your environment, I think that goes away if those other factors are strong and really support and move in that direction. Not always the case, as is, you know, that there's no absolutes you know, in this game. But yeah, that's, I think that would be my thought on that, is that if you really work through it and you take an honest look at those factors, then, you know, whether I lose a little bit of flexibility in financial insight or something like that, or I give up a little bit of that, you know, if those other things make sense, that's not as important.
Yep. I mean, you know, you think about how many stock consolidation efforts have happened in the federal government over the last 10 years. I mean, there seems like it's a constant, we're going to consolidate stocks down to one at the department level, or, you know, one's going to do endpoint management and the others are going to do kind of network monitoring or whatever the case may be. And where I think there's always hesitancy to give up power and give up access, where that has worked is when you have the provider, a competent, you know, provider, a competent capability that provides the same level of visibility, the quality of data that they know what they're getting, and transparency and kind of reporting that what they're seeing is accurate and there's value being provided back to the agency. I think if you can do those things, then you know, you have a greater capability of success or a greater opportunity for success, and you start to build trust with the agency that maybe I don't need to do this, and I've got enough of the data and the visibility and the, like it's being handled correctly. But until you get to that level of trust, I think it's always going to be a dicey proposition, which is why I think it's smart to, you know, take an approach of starting slow and starting with demonstrated capabilities, like Jim mentioned, DOJ and their proven capability of being a stock provider to other agencies, where there is proof and there is maturity, it allows a lot more trust and access for the agency to believe that that's going to work. Where there's not, or if it starts off on the wrong foot, it quickly goes south, and then you come back to, well, what is the driver for me doing this? Is it money? Is it because I'm being told to do it? Or is it because it's the best thing for my agency? And that's, I think that's key to the success of being able to consume managed services, is to be competent and to be transparent and to create at least the level of value, if not a higher level of value, of what they have from a technical perspective not just from a budget perspective.
No question. No question. Building those foundational efforts is important. David, why don't we take this in a slightly different direction? So CISA and its various network security offerings, even as they work together, they're also, I would say, all in their own state of evolution. I think more to the point, programs like CDM, you know, they now have to account for agencies deploying their cloud capabilities and all the visibility challenges and integration challenges that entails. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you have seen from your perch about how agencies are filling cloud gaps in the CDM program.
So it really, I mean, I've worked with the CDM program for, you know, coming up on a decade, various software companies. And, you know, the CDM program is just getting to the point where it's deploying bound capabilities at scale. Cloud gap fill is something that, you know, we are working with numerous agencies on right now. You look at Group E and Group F as examples of, you know, the only places that you really see cloud gap fill capabilities being considered and acquired and deployed at, hopefully, you know, at some point in the very near future. I think we look at how do we get in front of that next kind of thing? How do we try and anticipate technology requirements, but do them to a point where, you know, they make sense? And I would say, Jim, you know, something to look at, I'm sure your team already is kind of the secure edge. So SASE is kind of the term that Gartner's come up with. You know, I would see an opportunity for the QSMO office to step in potentially alongside CISA and be a thought leader, and maybe have that as something that would be a future for you all, a kind of shared capability, because we're really talking about cloud delivered capabilities at that point. You know, we'd have to partner very strong. I mean, we're not the only player in that. There's a lot of folks that do that. We'd all need to work together in terms of FedRAMP, you know, qualifications and, you know, what security concerns that would come with that. But overall, I think, you know, we're excited to see the progress that's happening in CDM. Very happy to continue to be a vendor and a partner to numerous agencies with their CDM deployments. And I think industry is standing ready to accelerate that process is kind of our message when it comes to cloud.
That's great. Thank you, David. I also note, you know, one thing that they sort of mentioned that I think is worth, we're sort of, you know, talking more about is, you know, what capabilities do the technical requirements that the CDM program entails for cloud deployments. I think you mentioned it's almost solely focused on data security, but maybe that's not the whole, the whole world for what a comprehensive cloud security deployment might look like in CDM. Can you speak a little bit about, you know, what the whole world looks like?
Obviously, those phase four, as they used to be called, capabilities are something that everybody's still thinking through, the data protection and the layer of securing the data is something that we're all kind of struggling with how to implement correctly at scale. I think the answer there honestly comes back to, again, cloud and how do you do these advanced capabilities embracing a cloud infrastructure in the back end, because the on-prem infrastructure just is not going to, it's just not going to support the level of AI, ML environment, you know, and requirements that's needed. If we don't go off-prem to do those things, we won't be able to do the data protection and cloud security that we need to at scale. I think everybody realizes that. And so we just look forward to partnering with the federal government and wherever areas we can. To prove that the cloud-based offerings that we all have, and we're not the only one, are secure and are as secure, and that, you know, our CSP partners are wonderful, Amazon, Azure, Oracle, IBM, you know, Google, they're all phenomenal partners to us, and we kind of want to partner with the government with a multi-cloud approach. So that we can do something that scales at an agency level or ultimately at a group RFS level, something like that.
I think the cloud one is a good example of where there has to be a common understanding between the agency and CDM and the integrator about what they're trying to accomplish, right? I mean, CDM has a dual mandate. They have a mandate for the cyber tools to do what the cyber tools do and securing the infrastructure, but they also want to provide visibility back to the federal government about the security posture of that infrastructure. And so, you know, specifically into the dashboard. And so there is, you know, one goal of getting technology in there to provide visibility. And there's another goal of having that technology do security things to make it make sense. And, you know, an agency may hear cloud from CDM and say, all right, well, I'm getting a CASB solution, or I'm getting some solution that's going to help me identify my cloud usage across the enterprise and help me protect it. And that may be the case, but it also may be the case that, you know, the integrator is in there trying to figure out, all right, what do you have and what can I pull from it to provide visibility back to the dashboard for how well this is being protected? And so that's a good, I guess I'm trying to pull that thread through to just point out a good example of like trying to align everyone's understanding of what the goal and the outcome is. To enable that capability to be delivered well and people to say, yes, I got what I need out of that, right? So, you know, the more agency input can go into, like, why, what do I need out of cloud security that is from CISA or from QSMO or from, you know, a capability that I'm trying to consume that would help me do my mission or make decisions about what I move to the cloud and what I don't, the more that conversation happens, I think the more we all have the ability to kind of fine tune exactly the offering that needs to be delivered to that particular agency or what the priority of that capability needs to be for a consumption of or a shared services capability to be consumed.
That's a great point. We've heard from numerous CISA officials about thinking through visibility in agency cloud deployments and the challenges that presents and how CDM might be utilized for to effectuate better visibility, along with better integration across the board. So that's a key point that I think we'll be focused on in the very near term. Jim, you have a whole host of industry experts in the audience, and you know, I'd love to hear from you what kind of engagement that you're looking for from industry, what expertise industry might be able to bring to bear, you know, what kind of partnership model you're looking for here, how we can help.
I think I alluded to it earlier. So, you know, as we think about the next areas that we may want to move into to really leverage innovative solutions from the marketplace to bring to bear against those areas that we've identified as likely candidates for shared services, we're going to go out in a variety of ways to learn more about those capability sets and sometimes even ask fundamental questions. You know, are we approaching this issue correctly? You know, are there considerations such as cloud architectures that have been discussed specifically that we didn't take into account? You know, we want to look for a number of creative ways to basically get at what is best in breed in technology to aim at our problems. And the QSMO really about seeing where we can aggregate that demand and really, as I said earlier, get at those economies of scale to drive costs down for innovative solutions that agencies can then take advantage of. So, I mentioned formal acquisition routes, but, you know, are there like innovation acquisition or agile acquisition paths that we have to look at where we may need a capability in a hurry and we need to move quickly to address a gap or a threat? So, so that's the short of it. Not dialogues not only around what we're procuring, but how we're procuring. We are certainly, and we're going to work closely with our acquisition teams and with DHS acquisitions and with GSA, as mentioned, to figure that out.
A very quick follow-up to that, Coleman, if you don't mind.
Please,
Jim, have you all considered, we see the DoD space moving forward at speed with OTA and CRADA-type acquisition paths. You mentioned some other, you know, things that you guys have been looking at there. Is that something that's been considered or is on the table?
I'm sure all avenues are being considered by our acquisition teams. So fortunately, we were able to work closely with the teams that were working with CDM. So really able to work with a skilled and experienced group there and looking at what our options are.
You know, Rob, Matt, you talked about the dual mission of CDM. Do you foresee the CDM mission changing in any way with the advent of QSMO and the shared service offerings, or how do you see them working in partnership?
you know, I think DefendF is a great place to start with Gizmo and you know, shared services capability of CDM being implemented and determining what could be leveraged there, what works well for the small and micros is kind of that crawl, walk, run approach for capability deployment. But, you know, I think CDM has to evolve to some degree to be more in line with the agency cyber priorities. And I think today there's you know, the work has been really focused on the foundational level of visibility of asset management, vulnerability management, people, you know, the user management. But because that's taken a pretty decent amount of time, you know, the CISO focus has shifted from that to cloud usage, data protection, HVA protection, things like that. And so keeping pace with the same priorities that the CISO has and the CDM program kind of connects to those, I think will be key to the success of how well CDM matures and how well it's continually evolving, and then, you know, ultimately how it feeds into Gizmo.
Yeah, I think
that's... I'll second that. Our teams are in the same part of CISO. We work closely. When I'm physically in an office these days, Kevin is just a few doors down, so I'm always knocking on his door. So, yeah, it's a close partnership.
Yep, totally agree. And, you know, that brings up a good point from what Maura was talking about earlier, which is thinking through Jim and sort of the Quizmo offerings. You know, DHS regularly goes through surge activities. The most recent and ongoing one, of course, is COVID and the sort of the rapid shift to secure remote work, both for itself and for other agencies and for all of its customer set. And I wonder how you sort of think about balancing those sort of rapid surge deployments, but also, you know, working to make sure current operations continue apace as well.
Yeah, I think it's a balance of both. So, you know, we are certainly in our roadmap thinking about what our portfolio services are, trying to think to the long term kind of. And again, I think it's just staying closely aligned with our agency customers in terms of what their operational needs are. So I think it's that balance of making sure we're offering value against gaps and what our agency customers need and securing their missions, their data, with that surge capacity. So.
We've got just a couple minutes left, but why don't I give each of the four of you an opportunity for just 1 to 2 minutes on what the future looks like, either, you know, the future of Quizmo and what it looks like in 5 years, the future of shared services and what it might look like in 5 years, and then the things that you think we should be doing now to make sure that happens. David, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I'd say we're seeing the delivery of shared services done through multiple acquisition paths. If you go back to the DoD example, there are OTAs in place for EIT as a service, you know, enterprise network endpoint, and compute and store all being done as a service through OTA prototype contracts. You have the EIS contracts out of GSA that are the service provider community who have absorbed a lot of that. In some cases, even NOC SOC capabilities being delivered through alongside MTIPS and kind of infrastructures there, TIC 3.0 being a part of that, but TIC 3.0 being a part of everything else we're doing, you know, on the on-prem side, it feels, and then there are standalone RFPs being done. Then there are, you know, the shared services acquisition done through Group F that I think Matt has talked about numerous times. Group level RFS is for cloud security on Group E. There are so many different places we're seeing this shared service model right now. It really is, you know, a kind of a change in acquisition and delivery of service to the federal government, and it goes alongside cloud. It'll be very interesting to see. We're trying to support them all, and it's difficult actually as a vendor. I think the government would understand. I mean, there are a lot of different paths to try and get these solutions, and it'll be very interesting to see, you know, which ones follow through in terms of success. And I think the history of eGov and NBC, NFC, all the shared services centers that have had success in the past, I think this is a really good opportunity for CISA here And I think there is demand, both on the agency side and on the vendor side, to be able to deliver these core capabilities we know our customers need.
Great. Thanks, David. Rob, over to you. You know, what do you look for in 5 years? How does it look to some of those Cisco customers?
I think it's, speed of government. So it's going to be a continuation of a lot of, what we're seeing right now, which is just pulling the thread on agency alignment with these federal mandates. And there's an abundance of technology available to get these objectives met. And so what we're seeing is that as long as, we're adhering to those federal mandates, there's a mix of technology that gets utilized. And that takes time, right? So it takes all the architecture, design, implementation, configuration, optimization, all of that good stuff that these agencies are going to be doing for the next few years. What I'm encouraged by is the fact that we continue to have those discussions about what that alignment needs to be and how best to do that alignment and gaining the visibility. And that seems to be that central or core tenet that folks are going after in that move towards that is increased visibility and awareness from a security perspective. So that's encouraging. So next 5 years, I think there's going to be a good bit of that. And folks like Jim and Qzmo will absolutely put the things in place that the market needs and will support that. And that's really what the federal apparatus is there for.
Great. Thank you. Matt.
I think it's a really exciting time in the federal cyberspace, right? Because you now have an agency that's responsible for cybersecurity of the entire federal government. And the opportunity that they have because of that is exciting because it can enable transformation really much faster than having, essentially 100 different agencies doing 100 different things to try to meet the same mission. So you get economies of scale very well there. You have centralized capability development that can be done faster and deployed faster, and you've got the workforce that is required to do that a little bit more centralized. So I think from all of those perspectives, it's a really exciting time. I think the challenges that we've talked about today are ultimately going to be what drives whether it's a success or not. And those challenges are organizational buy-in. Are these organizations mandated to leverage some of these shared services capabilities as they get built out, or do they get built out and no one consumes them? And I think to be able to do that, you really need to make sure that there's value being delivered to the agencies for them to say, yes, I want this, not just I have to have it or I have to do it because I'm told to, but I get value out of it and I don't need to do other things because I get enough value out of what I'm getting. So I think if there's a focus around aligning the value proposition with the capabilities being deployed. And I think, Qzmo is starting very well in that place to leverage past successes and where it's been demonstrated to agencies and there's relationships already established. I think the more that can be built on, the better opportunity is for success. But I think as a citizen of the country, I think it's the right answer for this country to have an agency that is wholly responsible for the defense and cyber posture of the federal government. And I think the ability for the capabilities to be built out in that way and the skill sets that are needed to deliver them, I think all of those things are going in the right direction. Now it's a kind of a proof in the pudding to see if it actually works.
100% agree with CISA and its predecessor agencies and the continued building of capabilities over time. Last word, over to you, Jim.
No, I mean, I'll just echo what was said. I mean, the true measure of success is if in a few years from now we have a portfolio of services that are delivering real value, helping agencies address the threats to their networks, their data, in a way that they derive a clear value proposition from and find value in, and we have a true record of success with our services. I think that's what success looks like. So improved cybersecurity maturity, addressing the threats to our data is our mission. So So if we've served that mission by making our agency's lives easier with good solutions, that's what success looks like to me. So.
I know I speak for Palo Alto Networks, and I'm certain I speak for the other panelists as well, Jim, that we are very much committed to that success and to working with you and to being a partner, and we look forward to continuing that partnership in the future.
Thanks for listening. If you would like more information on how Carahsoft or Palo Alto Networks can assist your organization, please visit www.carahsoft.com or email us at paloaltonetworks@carahsoft.com. Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.